It's a cabin you never visit, a lot you're not using, or a house that's more work than it's worth. These kinds of gifts can do more than clear your plate. They can power the public radio you depend on. Your property donation may offer you tax advantages while helping fund the stories and voices you count on every day. Learn more about giving land or real estate to KPFK at kpfk.org/real estate or call 1-844-277-4663.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles and streaming across the globe at kpfk.org. Radio powered by the people.
Down, and Congress votes to release the Epstein files. Russia makes new advances in Ukraine, and no more pennies ever again. These stories and more coming up from the studios of KPFA in Berkeley. This is the Pacifica Evening News. I'm Scott Baba. The longest government shutdown in U.S. history will end after the House voted 222-209 along mostly party lines to pass a spending bill passed by the Senate Monday to reopen the government. President Donald Trump called the measure a, quote, very big victory, while lawmakers face pressure to restore federal services and avoid further disruption before the Thanksgiving travel rush. Speaking before the House vote, Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson of Louisiana laid the blame for the shutdown squarely at the feet of congressional Democrats.
Republicans voted a collective 15 times to open the government for the people, and the Democrats voted that many times to close it. And then they admitted, many of them, and we could name them here, but I'm not going to take the time, they admitted that they were using the American people as leverage in this political game. They knew that it would cause pain, and they did it anyway. The whole exercise was pointless. It was wrong, and it was cruel.
Democrats still oppose ending the shutdown and warned it could return in January unless lawmakers extend Affordable Care Act subsidies that help make health care coverage affordable for millions. GOP leaders say the spending bill addresses government operations but rejected Democrats' push for health provisions. Obamacare subsidies have been crucial for millions of Americans, with 93% of the 24 million enrolled in the 2025 Affordable Care Act marketplace receiving tax credits to lower costs. If the subsidies expire, premiums for the 22 million receiving enhanced assistance could double or triple, potentially pushing 4 million people out of insurance coverage, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Democrats argued the loss of coverage could trigger a cascade of costs. More people entering Medicare in poorer health, hospitals facing higher uncompensated care, and state and local governments bearing additional financial strain. Insurers across the market might raise premiums for all ACA-compliant and off-exchange plans, while employers could pass rising expenses onto workers. Democratic Representative Sarah McBride of Delaware accused congressional Republicans of sabotaging the American healthcare system.
Republicans have played a game of chicken with food assistance, travel safety, and federal paychecks, all because they will stop at nothing to cut your healthcare. The only thing that congressional Republicans are more loyal to than Donald Trump is to cutting the health care of the American people. Yes. Let's be clear. This health care crisis is a choice by congressional Republicans and Donald Trump, who have inserted a $1 trillion bomb into the American health care system. And it is starting to go off.
The shutdown, which began September 19th, left federal agencies largely idle, delayed key economic reports, and caused widespread disruptions for millions of Americans. Airlines and hotel groups warned that travel chaos could worsen if Congress didn't act immediately. Federal unemployment and inflation data for October may never be released, complicating economic planning and Federal Reserve decisions. Republican Representative Cliff Bence of Oregon defended his party's role in the shutdown.
The situation we are in is because the Democrats chose to close down the government. And that meant the SNAP program, which is essential for many, many people, was stuck. The administration was stuck trying to scrounge up the money to try to keep it going.
Democratic House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York said that Democrats support all those Americans who had been affected by the shutdown, but insisted the issues at stake were larger than that.
House Democrats will continue to support our men and women in uniform. We will continue to support hardworking federal employees. We will continue to support our law enforcement personnel. House Democrats will continue to support our air traffic controllers. We will continue to support our TSA agents. We will continue to support our civil servants who have been under attack since day one of the Trump administration. But we cannot support the Republican effort to gut the health care of the American people.
Democrats in both chambers have expressed outrage at the eight members of the Senate Democratic Caucus who signed on to the bill to reopen the government. The agreement they made with Republicans approved a trio of full-year spending bills in exchange for fired workers to be rehired and a promise from Senate GOP leadership to hold a vote on the health care tax credits at a later date. Senate Republican Majority Leader John Thune of South Dakota has said that vote will be held before the second week in December, but House GOP leaders have not committed to holding a vote in the lower chamber. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, who led the party's weeks-long opposition to reopening the government without health care concessions, has faced intense criticism from progressive groups and some Democratic lawmakers, with calls for his resignation over perceived leadership failures. Schumer did not publicly support the deal and did not vote to advance it, but detractors argue the outcome reflects his inability to hold the caucus together. Democratic Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker declined to call on Schumer to step down, but criticized Democrats for caving on the shutdown.
I'm disappointed with the eight Democrats. I think that Chuck Schumer, I spoke with him, you know, as this was happening, and he voted against caving in and was trying to convince those eight to stay the course. I know there are lots of reasons why people don't support Chuck Schumer or have been upset with Chuck Schumer. I'm not sure this is the one thing that people should focus on to put them over the edge about it. But I can just say that we Democrats need to, you know, act in unison and we need to fight fire with fire. And we were winning. We were winning.
With the House passing the Senate-approved spending bill and President Donald Trump's expected signature, federal agencies and services will immediately resume operations, ending the record-long shutdown until at least January 30th of next year. About 670,000 furloughed federal employees are expected to return to work and receive back pay, including those who are required to work without pay, while previously issued shutdown-era layoffs will be reversed. SNAP benefits, which were halted during the shutdown, will resume immediately and remain fully funded through September of 2026. Air traffic controllers who were not furloughed but faced staffing shortages that forced flight reductions will receive 70% of back pay within 24 to 48 hours, though it may take time for flights to return to normal schedules. Meanwhile, even if the federal government shutdown ends swiftly tomorrow, funding delays for heating assistance for low-income households across the country could last for months, leaving many families, including thousands in Montana, at risk as winter sets in. Laura Hatch reports.
The Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, or LEHAP, helped nearly 15,000 Montanans pay their energy bills last year. Heather Grenier is with HRDC, a nonprofit that helps administer LEHAP funding in southwestern Montana.
We're looking at probably January, February before those benefits are there, and so people will be well into the heating season by that time and potentially behind on their heating bills already.
Grenier says it'll take that much time to appropriate the money on the federal level, then distribute it to the states, and then to the people who need it. The average LEAP benefit in Montana was around $750 a year last year. Grenier says for households that qualify, it's a crucial lifeline. She adds this will quickly follow the lapse in SNAP benefits as a real crisis this winter, as people make trade-offs to pay the bills.
Are they forgoing really important medications so that they can pay their heat bill so they don't lose their housing? Are they foregoing food, proper nutrition in order to be able to do that?
Grenier says while they've been monitoring potential cuts to the program for a while, they didn't anticipate these significant delays until further into the shutdown. She says they've been talking with fuel vendors about the processing and benefit delays. They're also reaching out to people in the program to help them through.
Helping families understand and how to budget and plan for that, and how maybe they can come get some extra food from us in that time to offset their heating budget.
I'm Laura Hatch.
A federal judge in Massachusetts granted a temporary restraining order yesterday, blocking the Trump administration from enforcing a U.S. Department of Agriculture directive that threatened states with penalties if they issued full SNAP benefits for November of 2025. The order came in a case brought by a multi-state coalition led by California Attorney General Rob Bonta, who praised the decision, saying it protects vulnerable residents and prevents the administration from forcing states to reverse steps taken to comply with prior court orders. In a statement, Bonta said, quote, "The court's ruling confirms that the Trump administration cannot force states to undo the steps they took to ensure that their most vulnerable residents could receive full SNAP benefits." The restraining order allows states to distribute full benefits without facing penalties while the legal challenge continues. A new poll by the Associated Press finds U.S. adults' opinions of how President Donald Trump is managing the federal government to have dropped sharply since early in his second term, highlighting the risks posed by the government shutdown and his efforts to reshape the federal workforce. The AP NORC Center for Public Affairs research poll was conducted after Democrats notched sweeping victories in this month's off-year elections, but before Congress took major steps to try and end the longest shutdown in U.S. history. The poll finds Americans, particularly Republicans, are less likely to approve of the Republican president's management of the government than they were in March. Trump's overall approval remained steady since October. KPFA would like to acknowledge that the following stories include descriptions of abuse and may be triggering for some of our listeners. Listener discretion is advised. New developments in the Jeffrey Epstein case are heating up in Washington. With a deal to end the government shutdown, Republican House speakers finally swore in newly elected Democrat Adelita Grijalva of Arizona, and she immediately signed a petition forcing a House vote on the release of the Trump administration's investigative files on the convicted sex offender. Shania Anderson reports.
Arizona Democrat Adelita Grijalva was sworn into Congress Wednesday, just over a month after winning a special election to replace her late father, Raul Grijalva. Moments after taking the oath, she signed a discharge petition that triggered a House vote on the Epstein Files Transparency Act, a bipartisan measure to release all unclassified records linked to Jeffrey Epstein's sex trafficking network. Grijalva's signature is a key step after 7 weeks of delay, during which House Speaker Mike Johnson refused to seat her despite her September election victory. Grijalva says the holdup was an effort to avoid this vote on the Epstein files.
But what the majority in this body has failed to do, hold Trump accountable as a co-equal branch of government that we are. It has been 50 days since the people of Arizona's 7th Congressional District elected me to represent them. 50 days that over 800,000 Arizonans have been left without access to the basic services that every constituent deserves. This is an abuse of power. One individual should not be able to unilaterally obstruct the swearing in of a duly elected member of Congress for political reasons. Our democracy only works when everyone has a voice. We need to respect tribal sovereignty in our environment. We need to stand up for LGBTQ plus rights, because that's what the American people expect us to do. fight for them. That is why I will sign the discharge petition right now to release the Epstein files.
The bill, co-sponsored by California Democrat Ro Khan and Republican Thomas Massie, is backed by all Democrats and a few Republicans, including Lauren Boebert, Marjean Taylor Greene, and Nancy Mace. Massie told reporters that even if a member who signed the petition leaves Congress or passes away, their signature still stands, ensuring the petition moves forward regardless. The petition comes amidst the release of 23,000 pages of documents from Epstein's estate after months of delay. Some of the emails reference President Donald Trump with messages suggesting he may have known more than he's letting on about Epstein's criminal behavior. In one 2011 email to Ghislaine Maxwell, Epstein wrote, quote, "The dog that hasn't barked is Trump." One from 2018 describes Trump as, quote, "borderline insane," while another from 2019 says, quote, "of course he knew about the girls." Trump has dismissed the new disclosures as, quote, "a Democrat hoax," and warned his Republican supporters to not fall into that trap, blaming Democrats for trying to smear him. White House Secretary Karoline Leavitt echoed that view, saying the emails, quote, "prove nothing," and dismissing the uproar as a distraction engineered by Democrats, timed just as Trump was preparing to end the government shutdown.
These emails prove absolutely nothing other than the fact that President Trump did nothing wrong. And what President Trump has always said is that he was from Palm Beach and so was Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein was a member at Mar-a-Lago until President Trump kicked him out because Jeffrey Epstein was a pedophile and he was a creep.
With Representative Grijalda sworn in and having signed the petition, the countdown is officially on for a full House vote that could finally release the long-awaited Epstein files in their entirety. That vote is expected to come in early December. For KPFA News, I'm Shania Anderson.
President Donald Trump has asked the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn a jury's finding that he sexually abused writer E. Jean Carroll in the mid-1990s and later defamed her. In a lengthy filing Monday, Trump's attorneys argued that the $5 million verdict was based on, quote, "indefensible evidentiary rulings," claiming Carroll's lawyers were allowed to present highly inflammatory testimony to the jury. Carroll, a longtime advice columnist, testified at her 2023 trial that Trump turned a friendly encounter at a Manhattan department store in 1996 into a violent sexual assault inside a dressing room. Prosecutors in the case of a man charged with killing a top Minnesota Democratic lawmaker and her husband say they've turned over a massive amount of evidence to the defense. Federal prosecutor Harry Jacobs told the court today that investigators have provided substantially all they have against Vance Belter, who has pleaded not guilty to murder in the killing of former Minnesota House Speaker Melissa Hortman and her husband, and to attempted murder in the shooting of State Senator John Hoffman and his wife. Federal defender Manny Atwell said they need more time to review more than 130,000 pages of documents and 800 hours of recordings. Ukraine's justice and energy ministers submitted their resignations amid a major embezzlement and kickback scandal involving the state nuclear power company. The move comes as Russia's renewed attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure in the four-year-old war caused rolling blackouts ahead of winter. It's fast becoming one of the most significant government crises since Moscow's full-scale invasion, with media reports implicating a close associate of President Volodymyr Zelensky. Anti-corruption watchdogs revealed the findings of a 15-month investigation, including 1,000 hours of wiretaps, resulting in the detention of five people and another seven linked to about $100 million in kickbacks in the energy sector. Significant gains in southern Ukraine as it expands its frontline attacks. Charles de Ledesma reports.
Russian forces launched at least three attacks on Kharkiv on Wednesday morning, using combat drones, according to regional officials. The strikes targeted the regional territorial recruitment and social support center and logistics and transportation company. Oleg Sinyagubov, head of the Kharkiv Regional Military Administration, tells the AP, "We currently know of three strikes by Shahids in this district of Kharkiv, an old residential area. We know of one victim whose injuries are minor. However, it was early in the morning and there were many people on the streets. The strikes damaged buildings and warehouse facilities too, and fires broke out," the State Emergency Service said. In wider Russian attacks, five people were injured, authorities say. Four have been hospitalized and one woman received medical treatment at the scene. Meanwhile, the Russian army has overrun three settlements in the southern Zaporizhia region as Moscow's forces expand their efforts to capture more Ukrainian territory. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Israel's president says authorities must take decisive action to stop, quote, shocking and serious Jewish settler violence against Palestinian civilians and Israeli soldiers in the occupied West Bank. President Isaac Herzog today added a powerful voice to what's been muted criticism by top Israeli officials. Two top Israeli military officials echoed Herzog's remarks, with one saying violence by a settler, quote, anarchist fringe, would be dealt with firmly. The remarks come a day after dozens of massed Israeli settlers attacked two Westerners. Blake Sifton reports.
Dozens of Israeli settlers attacked two Palestinian villages in the northern West Bank, setting fire to a building, several vehicles, and farmland. They then clashed with Israeli soldiers sent to the scene. Four Palestinians were injured and the Israeli military detained four settlers. President Herzog condemned the attack as shocking and severe and said such violence against civilians and soldiers is intolerable. Settler violence in the West Bank has increased steadily this year, especially during the annual olive harvest in October. The UN recorded 264 settler attacks that caused injuries, property damage, or both. Blake Sifton, Tel Aviv.
President Donald Trump has urged Israel to pardon Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in a corruption case. Trump called the case a, quote, political unjustified prosecution in a letter to Israeli President Isaac Herzog today. Herzog acknowledged the letter but said a formal request is needed for a pardon. Trump also mentioned the pardon during a speech last month at Israel's Knesset, receiving a standing ovation. Concerns about American influence in Israeli politics are growing. Netanyahu is the only sitting Israeli prime minister to be indicted, facing charges of fraud, breach of trust, and accepting bribes. The UN climate summit in Brazil entered its third day today as world leaders gathered to address the growing climate crisis. The delegates were joined by a flotilla that paddled in for a people's summit, aiming at creating unity and solidarity on climate action. Christopher Martinez reports.
The UN Climate Summit has drawn thousands of diplomats, heads of state, and others to address the global climate crisis. On Wednesday, they were joined by more activists who arrived in a flotilla of boats and canoes. They'll be taking part in a people's summit taking place alongside COP30. Waya is a member of the delegation of Wisdom Keepers, and she paddled in a canoe with her daughter.
We're here at COP30 in Brazil in Belém, and we just paddled Waka with our family, the Huniquin. We're mixing our waters together, and we're breathing together and singing together and praying together.
The gathering comes a day after protesters broke through security barricades at the main conference site. The activists talked about the importance of making the voice of the people heard after years of these talks being held in countries where civil society is not free to demonstrate. Jacob Johns is another member of A Wisdom Keepers.
He wanted to do this canoe paddle as a ceremonial offering to our relatives to prove to the spirits of this land that we are coming with a good heart and with good intention. And more importantly, that we must stand together. The governments fail us over and over and over again. And it's the suppressive systems that want to convince us that we are separate from each other.
That sense of solidarity in the climate struggle is not universally shared. Notably absent from this year's climate summit is the United States, which decided not to send a delegation. But there is a delegation of more than 100 governors, mayors, and other state and local leaders from the U.S. including California Governor Gavin Newsom.
Where the hell's the United States of America? We're seeding cheap energy, green energy, infrastructure, supply chain, manufacturing. We're seeding economic power to other countries, notably China.
He calls the administration's decision to sit out the summit, in his words, doubling down on stupid. He says it risks the U.S. being left behind as an economic power. But, he says, California is stepping up.
This is not about electric power. This is about economic power. And we in the state of California are not going to cede that race to China. We're going to compete.
The United States is not alone in skipping the climate summit. The tiny country of San Marino is also absent, as are Myanmar and Afghanistan, both countries torn by strife. Meanwhile, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is urging countries to step up, telling them this is a time for action, no greenwashing. He's urged young activists to make their voices heard on the streets, at the ballot box, and in legislatures. That's a message that resonates with activists like Jacob Johns of A Wisdom Keepers.
In our world that's full of emotion and chaos, we must use our original teachings that guide us into a future that is logical and allows us to broadcast truth. And hopefully, with this intention, we're able to shift the hearts and minds of world leaders.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
A federal judge has ordered the release of hundreds of people arrested in Chicago during the Trump administration's immigration raids there. Judge Jeffrey Cummings directed the U.S. Justice Department to produce a list of the 615 people taken into custody and to release those who have no criminal history or prior removal order on $1,500 bond. The order also bars federal officials from pressuring detainees into voluntary deportation. The raids, part of an operation dubbed Midway Blitz, have been criticized for excessive force used against protesters. The ACLU and the National Immigrant Justice Center filed the lawsuit, arguing that federal agents violated a consent decree by carrying out warrantless arrests across the city. Two Federal Reserve officials signaled today that they oppose another interest rate cut at the central bank's December meeting, complicating expectations for the Fed's next move. Boston Fed President Susan Collins and Atlanta Fed President Raphael Bostic cited persistently high inflation, a resilient economy, and limited government data caused by the shutdown as reasons to hold rates steady. Collins said, quote, formulating an economic outlook is challenging, and the limited data compounds the difficulty. She added that the policy rates may remain unchanged for some time. Bostic noted that surveys show many companies plan to raise prices next year, signaling inflation may not ease soon. The comments contrast with earlier expectations for a third straight rate cut after reductions in September and October. Analysts now say the Fed could skip December, waiting until clearer signs on inflation and labor market trends before adjusting borrowing rates. Meanwhile, Raphael Bostic, president of Federal Reserve Bank in Atlanta, is retiring at the end of his current term in February, opening up a new seat on the Fed's interest rate setting committee at a time that President Donald Trump is seeking to exert more control over the central bank. Bostic serves on the committee that decides key short-term interest rates. Trump has repeatedly attacked the Fed this year for not cutting interest rates as quickly as he would prefer. A federal appeals court heard arguments today over a spending law that cuts Medicaid reimbursements to Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion provider. The law targets organizations that both provide abortions and receive more than $800,000 a year in Medicaid reimbursements. Planned Parenthood argues the law is unconstitutional, saying it discriminates against providers for offering legal medical services. In September, the appeals court allowed the law to remain in effect while the case continues. The organization says the restriction has already cost $45 million in lost funding, forcing its clinics to cover Medicaid patient costs out of pocket. A Utah judge earlier this week rejected a congressional map passed by Republican lawmakers and ordered a new map, which is likely to give Democrats a new U.S. House seat in the state for the first time since 2021. District Court Judge Diana M. Gibson, a Republican appointee, said the GOP map, quote, unduly favors Republicans and disfavors Democrats, and adopted a neutral map submitted by plaintiffs, including the League of Women Voters of Utah. The new map keeps much of heavily Democratic Salt Lake County intact, rather than splitting it across multiple districts. The ruling reinstates Proposition 4, a 2018 voter-approved measure requiring Utah to draw congressional maps neutrally. Republicans had previously repealed the proposition and drawn maps favoring their party, sparking years of legal battles. Farah Siddiqui has more.
Catherine Beal with the Utah League of Women Voters says the judge's decision to overturn the legislature's map restores a level of fairness. She says it keeps more liberal Salt Lake City intact instead of diluting it by splitting it among four more Republican districts.
Made a difference for the voters. It just gives every single voter a voice, and it sends a message to the legislature that they have to represent their constituents, not just the ones they choose, every single one of them.
Partisan efforts to redistrict in Kansas, Indiana, and Maryland are running into resistance from legislators, some of whom call it an unwise power grab. Some resistant Republicans report getting pressure from the White House. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
And we'll be back with more news after this break.
Corporate media would rather you stay quiet, but on Ralph Nader Radio Hour, you get fearless conversations about power, democracy, and the fights corporations don't want exposed. And Terra Verde brings you the front line of environmental justice. Community voices defending the earth against those who exploit it. Together, these shows strip away the spin and give you the knowledge to act. KPFA, truth that empowers. Voices you won't hear anywhere else.
Every Friday, KPFA brings you what corporate media won't. Project Censored exposes the stories buried behind the profit-driven newsroom. The truth they'd rather you never question. An economic update breaks down how power and money really works, who benefits, who pays, and how we fight back. Two shows, one mission. Independent journalism that keeps you informed and unafraid. KPFA, truth that empowers. Voices you won't hear anywhere else.
Former Chief of Staff to Governor Gavin Newsom, Dana Williamson, was indicted today on 23 counts of bank and wire fraud, accused of helping steal $225,000 from a dormant campaign account between 2022 and 2024. Federal prosecutors allege Williamson and several political operatives, including lobbyist Greg Campbell and former federal official Sean Mikulski, funneled the money through consulting firms and disguised it as pay for a no-show job. Williamson is also accused of falsely claiming $1.7 million in business expenses to fund luxury travel and purchases. The indictment indicates former U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra, whose campaign funds were allegedly used, had no knowledge of the scheme. Newsom's office said the governor expects public officials to uphold the highest standards of integrity. Williamson, a longtime Democratic strategist, was scheduled to appear in federal court today. Meanwhile, San Leandro Councilmember Brian Azevedo pleaded not guilty today to federal charges that he accepted a $2,000 bribe and lied to law enforcement. U.S. District Judge Candace Westmore allowed Azevedo to remain free on a $25,000 unsecured bond, setting his next court date for January 8. He faces up to 20 years in prison for bribery and up to 5 years for making false statements along with potential fines. Prosecutors allege Azevedo took the bribe in November of 2023 and funneled payments through a company and bank account in his wife's name. His case is linked to federal indictments of former Oakland Mayor Sheng Tao, her partner Andre Jones, and two Bay Area housing executives accused of paying bribes to influence contracts. Azevedo waived his right to a grand jury indictment, and prosecutors indicated the case could be close to resolution, possibly leading to a plea or sentencing without further hearings. Meteorologists are tracking a powerful atmospheric river heading for the West Coast. The system is expected to bring strong winds and heavy rain to California from Thursday through Saturday, with possible flooding and wind damage. For more on the impacts, we spoke with Roger Goss, the National Weather Service in San Francisco.
And I'm a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. Yeah, so we are expecting, it's actually raining right now, light rainfall occurring in the coastal ranges of the higher elevations of the North Bay as we are starting to see early signs of the system that's coming in that'll be moving through late tonight and into early tomorrow morning. But we are expecting the brunt of the storm system to move through late tonight and into early tomorrow morning. It's looking like it'll move through the Bay Area sometime between midnight and 9 a.m. And we are expecting southerly winds to increase, especially across the higher terrain and along the coast. We could see gusts up to 60 miles per hour.
A high wind warning and wind advisories are in effect for much of the region, from Big Sur north to the Oregon border and inland as far as Hollister and Stockton. Meteorologists warn that power outages, downed trees, and travel hazards are possible as winds intensify. Residents are advised to prepare ahead of the storm.
Definitely these type of wind speeds would result in isolated to widespread power outages. There's potential for ponding of water on roadways. People, I would encourage people on tomorrow's commute to delay their travel if at all possible, because it is forecast to move through the heart of the Bay Area during the rush hour traffic.
Heavy snow is likely over the Sierra Nevada, where a winter weather advisory is in effect from Thursday afternoon through early Friday above 8,000 feet, including the Lake Tahoe area and Truckee. Meanwhile, a geomagnetic storm from the solar activity is also expected to continue into early Thursday. Colorful auroras are appearing in unexpected places this week thanks to a surge of powerful solar storms. Space weather forecasters say the storms reached severe levels Tuesday night, lighting up skies across Europe and as far south as Kansas and Texas. The activity caused brief disruptions to GPS signals and power grids. Scientists say the sun has released several massive bursts of energy, known as coronal mass ejections, two of which have already reached Earth, with at least one more still on the way. The sun is now at the peak of its 11-year solar cycle, meaning auroras could remain widespread in the days ahead. Reached by email, KPFA News spoke with Mike Betwee, operations chief at the NOAA Space Weather Prediction Center, who confirmed there were reports of auroras as far south as Tampa, Florida overnight, an unusually low latitude for such displays. He explained that the visibility was due to the intensity of the storm and a favorable magnetic connection with Earth's atmosphere, conditions that allowed the aurora to expand much further south than normal. While not unprecedented, Betwee said it's, quote, quite unusual for auroras to be visible this far south, likely only once or twice per decade. Long solar cycles. Similar activity was seen during the G5 storm in May of 2024 when lights reached as far as the Florida Keys. He added that similar conditions are expected again tonight, with the chance of auroras continuing into tomorrow night, though at lower intensity. For more information on the science behind auroras, visit the NOAA Space Weather Prediction Center online at swpc.noaa.gov. Tenants in East Oakland have filed a lawsuit against a landlord who is accused of using immigration threats and harassment to push them out of their rent-controlled homes. Adam Morton, staff attorney with the California Center for Movement Legal Services, said,
"We're bringing this case because of the actions of Derek Chavis, a Bay Area landlord who thought he could buy a cheap property, kick out the long-term tenants, including an 89-year-old woman, and jack up the rent to make a quick profit. When the tenants stood up for themselves and the community they built, he illegally asked about their immigration status and sent threatening text messages, including, quote-unquote, hope you're legal, and hopefully we can make a deal. When these tactics failed, he escalated his harassment by trying to make the properties unlivable. The tenants bring this case to fight for their community and to tell Derek they won't let him get away with it."
Under California law, threatening tenants with immigration enforcement is illegal. Assembly Bill 291, the Immigrant Tenants Protection Act, was passed in 2017.
which includes, I guess, a few different protections, one of which says that a landlord cannot threaten to call immigration enforcement on somebody who is either a tenant or somebody who's associated with the tenant. And there's another law that says that they can't ask about it. And these laws are supplemented by other local protections like we have here in Oakland, where it's actually considered tenant harassment for a landlord to ask a tenant about their immigration status. So this case, as far as precedential value, I feel like we're really working off of well-established law here. So we're not necessarily hoping to make any sort of precedent. It's more these are rights that have already existed and we want to enforce them.
The tenants, joined by the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment and the California Center for Movement Legal Services, announced the lawsuit today at the Alameda County Courthouse.
Oh, it certainly is. We know of cases in Los Angeles. I was just on a call the other day about Orange County. And frankly, I think what's really concerning, what's really scary, is that a lot of the tenants who are, you know, having this happen to them, who are being abused in this way, they don't feel like they can speak up about it, and they don't feel like they can get any help, because if they do, they're afraid, you know, they'll get deported. And so in that way, we believe this is much more widespread than we could ever even truly know. But part of our hope in bringing cases like this is that more tenants will feel emboldened and to know that they are not alone. We are filing this lawsuit because we stand with immigrant tenants and we want them to know they are not alone. We've received reports from across the state of landlords threatening tenants based on their immigration status. And in filing lawsuits like this, we want to send a clear message that in California, this is illegal, and we will proudly stand alongside our immigrant neighbors to fight back.
Tenants and their advocates say the case sends a message that intimidation and racial profiling in housing will be met with legal action, because this issue is more prevalent than many realize, especially in immigrant and low-income communities. If you're experiencing threats or harassment from a landlord because of your immigration status, attorneys say there are resources available to help. KPFA News reached out to the landlord in question, whose number was listed on Zillow. However, We have not heard back as of broadcast. The California Supreme Court has ruled that a warning shown to people before filing complaints against Los Angeles police officers violates free speech rights. In a 6-1 decision, the justices said the language, which warned of penalties for filing false complaints, could discourage citizens from coming forward with legitimate grievances. Kennedy Cuello reports.
The Los Angeles Police Department form reads, if you make a complaint against an officer knowing that it is false, you can be prosecuted on a misdemeanor charge. The court ruled in favor of the city of Los Angeles and against the union that represents its police officers. The court found that the warning is biased in favor of the police because witnesses who make false statements in defense of an accused officer would face no charges for lying. I'm Kennedy Cuello.
The California Department of Justice is investigating a Los Angeles police shooting in Watts that left one man dead yesterday afternoon. According to CBS News Los Angeles, officers responded to reports of a man swinging a metal chain at people near Calmia and 103rd Streets around noon. Police say the man ignored commands to surrender. Officers fired 40-millimeter beanbag rounds, but when those had no effect, they opened fire. The man, who has not yet been identified, died after being taken to a hospital. Attorney General Rob Bonta said the DOJ is reviewing the case under Assembly Bill 1506, which requires the state to independently investigate officer-involved shootings that result in the death of an unarmed civilian. Once the investigation is complete, the findings will be reviewed by the DOJ's special prosecution section. Anyone with information is urged to contact the department at 916-210-2871. California plans to revoke 17,000 commercial driver's licenses issued to immigrants, citing violations of state law. Though Governor Gavin Newsom said the action is not related to immigration status. The move follows concerns raised by the Trump administration about licenses granted to people in the country illegally and comes after fatal crashes involving truck drivers in multiple states. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy said California's revocations confirm the state acted improperly and warned that $160 million in federal funding could be withheld if all problematic licenses are not invalidated. Newsom's office said every affected driver had valid federal work authorization. The revocations will take effect within 60 days, though new federal rules for commercial licenses announced in September will not be applied retroactively. Under those rules, only immigrants on H-2A, H-2B, or E-2 visas qualify for commercial licenses going forward. California officials did not provide specifics on the violations prompting the revocations. Waymo expanded its robo-taxi service to highways and interstates in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Phoenix today, allowing passengers to travel longer distances without a driver behind the wheel. In the Bay Area, riders can now be picked up or dropped off curbside at San Jose International Airport, with service at San Francisco International Airport planned in the future. The highway rollout is gradual in Los Angeles, while the Bay Area expansion includes routes along the entire peninsula south of San Francisco, including Silicon Valley cities such as Palo Alto and Mountain View. Passengers can hail a Waymo car near City Hall and ride 45 miles on 101 to the airport. Waymo, owned by Google's parent company Alphabet, leads the slowly growing robo-taxi industry, facing emerging competition from Amazon's ZoomX service and Tesla's planned CyberCab. Safety concerns persist, which have prompted California to enact new laws that take effect next year to hold self-driving companies accountable for traffic violations. The legislation requires companies to maintain detailed records of autonomous vehicle operations, report incidents to state regulators, and ensure companies can be cited or fined for unsafe driving. A Salinas agricultural company has agreed to pay $125,000 in civil penalties to settle allegations that exposed employees to harmful pesticides. The Monterey County District Attorney's Environmental Protection Unit said the growers' company allowed 93 field workers to enter a lettuce field on October 9th of 2023, despite warning signs. The field had been treated less than a day earlier with Sivanto Prime, which requires a 24-hour restricted entry period. 66 workers reported symptoms including nausea, dizziness, headache, and irritation to the eyes, nose, and throat. Prosecutors say only 34 employees were taken for medical evaluation as required by law. A felony charge has been filed against the supervisor who ordered workers into the field, but he has since died. The case was referred to the district attorney's office as a priority investigation by the Monterey County Agricultural Commissioner. The company, founded in 1950, operates in Salinas and Arizona. California Attorney General Rob Bonta and a coalition of five other states urged the Trump administration today to withdraw a proposal to rescind the Bureau of Land Management's public lands rule, calling it illegal and environmentally destructive. The rule, adopted last year, recognized conservation as a valid use of public lands alongside mining, grazing, and drilling, and allowed leasing for restoration and climate mitigation. Bonta said rolling back the rule would, quote, pave the way for exploitation of America's shared lands. The attorneys general argued the rescission would violate federal law and threaten ecosystems, recreation, and jobs supported by public lands. Bonta, co-leading the coalition with Oregon, said California's 15 million acres of BLM-managed land are essential for clean air, water, and wildlife. The public lands rule covers 245 million acres nationwide. The U.S. Mint struck its final penny today, ending more than two centuries of production, despite concerns the change will cause confusion and pricing issues for consumers and retailers. The last pennies were made in Philadelphia, where they've been minted since 1793. Officials said the final few pennies would be auctioned off. The move comes after the Trump administration ordered the phase-out earlier this year to save an estimated $56 million a year. Speaking at the striking of the last penny, U.S. Treasurer Brandon Beach defended the change, citing rising production costs for the coin as well as declining use.
You know, as public servants, it's our responsibility to steward public resources with prudence and transparency. However, over the last decade, the American taxpayers have been repeatedly shortchanged. I want you to think about this. Just over the last 10 years, production for a single penny has tripled while the demand has plummeted. Given the rapid modernization of the American wallet, the Department of the Treasury and President Trump no longer believe the continued production of the penny is fiscally responsible or necessary to meet the demands of the American public.
But store owners say the move came abruptly with little guidance on rounding prices or handling cash transactions. In some states and cities, laws require merchants to offer exact change or ban them from having different prices for cash or card transactions. Some banks have begun rationing coins, and small businesses report shortages and frustrated customers. Critics warn the decision could lead to higher prices and rounding that disproportionately affects low-income shoppers. Head Start teachers in California are speaking out about the chaos that was prompted not only by the government shutdown, but also by cuts to safety net programs. Suzanne Potter reports.
The agreement to end the shutdown only funds the government through January 30th, so federally funded programs like Head Start face significant uncertainty going forward. Tammy Lewis is an early Head Start teacher in Gardena and a member of California Federation of Teachers, who says she works with low-income families every day.
SNAP and Medi-Cal keeps them from falling into poverty. The Head Start program that allowed them to go to work and not have to worry about that coming out of their paycheck.
The Republican funding bill signed last July cut billions from Medi-Cal and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, known as CalFresh, in the Golden State. And it allowed subsidies for health plans through Covered California to expire at the end of the year. Covered California, in a statement, said it expects costs to almost double for millions of families. Nationally, more than 20 million people rely on subsidies to afford health plans sold on the Affordable Care Act exchanges. While Head Start in Gardena is funded through next June, other Head Start programs, including three in California, had to close during this past shutdown. Lewis says she's weathered other shutdowns in her 15 years at Head Start, but this one has been the worst.
It's scary because you don't know where your future lies. This is what I've basically been doing all of my life. So it's kind of scary because I don't know what I will be doing next if Head Start was to end.
As of 2022, more than 260,000 people worked for Head Start nationwide. California receives more than $850 million a year in federal funding for the program. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
All 14 victims killed in last week's UPS plane crash in Kentucky have been identified. Jennifer King reports.
Officials in Louisville, Kentucky say they have completed the grim task of recovering and identifying the remains of all 14 people killed in the fiery UPS plane crash last week. Jefferson County Coroner Joanne Farmer.
They were identified by DNA.
Louisville Mayor Craig Greenberg says it's a difficult time.
Each of these victims represents a life full of purpose, interrupted far too soon.
Along with the three UPS pilots, those on the ground include Ella Petty Wharton, who was standing in line at a scrap metal business. 37-year-old Matthew Sweets was severely burned and died days later. Sweets worked as an electrician and is survived by two young children. Relatives say Luis Nesfaden and his three-year-old granddaughter Kimberly were in the wrong place at the wrong time when the plane crashed to the ground just off the runway. I'm Jennifer King.
Kenneth Binder was appointed today as San Mateo County's next sheriff, taking the helm of a department still recovering from the ouster of former sheriff Christina Corpus. Corpus was removed last month after an independent investigation found she had an inappropriate relationship with her chief of staff, including creating a police department position for him with a salary of over $250,000, and that she fostered a culture of intimidation and retaliation, prompting multiple votes of no confidence from cities and the Board of Supervisors. The board used newly granted authority to remove her without a recall election. Binder, interim police chief in Gilroy and a former Santa Clara County undersheriff, was chosen over two other finalists for his experience managing jails, rebuilding troubled departments, and navigating federal immigration enforcement policies. The board cited his calm demeanor and endorsements from local unions, including the San Mateo County Central Labor Council, as factors for the decision to hire him. Binder will serve the remainder of Corpus's term through January of 2029. Jane Goodall, known for her work towards humanitarian and environmental causes, was memorialized in a service in Washington, D.C. Family, friends, and others gathered to celebrate her life. Anthony Perazzo reports.
A funeral service for well-known conservationist Jane Goodall was held at the Washington National Cathedral. Those attending the service included loved ones, professional associates, and people inspired by her work. Anna Rathman is director of the USA branch of the Jane Goodall Institute. She describes what interacting with Goodall was like.
Jane was always firm in her beliefs, but never unfeeling in others' views. She was always direct, but never aggressive, always kind, but never contentious. She treated all beings on earth with a civility and respect. She was a matriarch and a model in attitude and in action.
Goodall's field research among chimpanzees in Africa revolutionized the field of primatology. Goodall documented them performing activities previously believed to be exclusive to humans. Her observations and subsequent magazine and documentary appearances in the 1960s transformed how the world perceived not only humans' closest living biological relatives, but also the emotional and social complexity of all animals. In 1977, she founded the Jane Goodall Institute to sustain the study and protection of chimpanzees while also improving the welfare of scores of local communities. Goodall's work inspired many different people to engage. Leonardo DiCaprio spoke at the service. He says Goodall knew how to captivate people.
The Jane I was fortunate enough to get to know was gentle, curious, funny, witty, and absolutely unstoppable. She could light up a room with her stories and somehow inspire everyone she met to believe that they individually could do better.
Throughout her career, Goodall was active in spreading awareness through popular media. When the COVID-19 pandemic hit in 2020 and halted her in-person events, she became active on social media, podcasting from her childhood home in England. At the funeral service, one of Goodall's grandchildren, Merlin Van Lawick, spoke about her reflections towards the end of her life.
The next great adventure will be discovering what comes after life. Just think about it, she would say. Either there's nothing, in which case there's nothing to worry about, or there's something. And isn't that the most exciting thing of all, to discover what that is?
Jane Goodall passed away at the age of 91. For KPFA News, I'm Anthony Perazzo.
The number of people diagnosed with tuberculosis worldwide rose again last year, eclipsing 2023's record total. About 8.3 million people across the globe were reported as newly diagnosed with TB in 2024. The World Health Organization notes that not all infections are diagnosed and that the new numbers represent 78% of the estimated number of actual new cases. Globally, the number of deaths caused by TB fell in 2024. Tuberculosis cases in the U.S. continued to rise last year, reaching the highest level in more than a dozen years. The vast majority of U.S. TB cases are diagnosed in people born in other countries. Pakistan's prime minister has offered talks to Afghanistan's Taliban government in renewed peace overtures. Today's offer by Shahbaz Sharif comes about a week after negotiations between the two sides collapsed in Istanbul, raising fears that a ceasefire brokered by Qatar and Turkey could unravel and trigger new border clashes. It also comes a day after a deadly suicide bombing outside a court in the capital of Islamabad killed 12 people and wounded 27 others. The prime minister said that Pakistan wanted peace in the region because it was good for both sides. There was no immediate comment from Kabul to Sharif's offer. Bay Area weather tonight, breezy, a chance of rain in the evening, then rain after midnight, lows in the lower 60s. Breezy tomorrow with showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms in the morning, then rain in the afternoon, highs in the upper 60s. In the Central Valley, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain after 4 a.m., lows in the high 50s. Rain likely tomorrow, mainly after 10 a.m., mostly cloudy with a high near 70. In Los Angeles tonight, mostly cloudy with lows in the high 50s. Partly sunny tomorrow with a chance of showers after 4 p.m. Highs in the low 70s. That's it for the news. I'm Scott Baba. Rod Akeel is at the controls. Good evening.
KPFK is hosting a meet and greet for listeners and supporters from Ventura, Oxnard, Carpinteria, and Santa Barbara on Saturday, November 15th from 11 till 4 p.m. at the First Congressional Church located